Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the Material Podcast, episode number 461. I'm your host, Florence Ion, and I am joined here by my partner, Andy Anatko. Hello, Andy.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. I've been excited. I love talking about policy. I love talking about like the deeper dive sort of stuff. Okay, but sometimes it's nice to have a tip that you know that okay. As soon as I share this with people, they're going to run out and do this because it's going to help them.
Good old service journalism. Let's do it.
Exactly. And I'm going to put this forward in the format of one of the many people who have recipe blogs, but probably shouldn't. Instead of getting right to the tip, I'm going to start with the story about my gap year in Provence. Now, no, actually not that, but okay. So the, I have two desks. One is the podcasting desk that has, as I'm going to hold up for Flo's benefit, the keyboard that is like a laptop style keyboard that's very, very quiet. So if I need to look something up, you don't hear a click, click, click. But then I've got the place where the magic happens, which is the big desk that has the really, really loud clicky keyboard that I love to type on. And it has two fold out legs. And unfortunately, one of the legs broke. Actually, didn't so much break. There was just like two pins that sort of clip it into like holes in the bottom. And okay. One of them had a crack in it, so it couldn't like maintain that tension. Okay. So this afternoon, I got out the usual tools to mend it. We're talking about super glue and baking powder. Because super glue, great for plastic. But when you add baking powder, like to super glue before it sets, it essentially, there's a chemical reaction that's been documented all over the internet. But what you need to know is that it's basically like a way of applying a layer of new plastic to something. And if you can build up layers and shapes very, very easily with just, again, a little drop of super glue, cyanoacrylate glue, then just like a little sort of dusting of baking powder on it, baking soda, sorry. The stuff that's in the paper box.
Baking soda, yes.
Thank you. Okay.
Not powder.
Exactly. Then you sort of like blow off like what hasn't been solidified into plastic, add a little bit more. And in this fashion, instead of just simply working some glue into the crack and holding it closed and hoping that will like maintain the tension, I've essentially like surrounded that little leg with like a cast of plastic resin, sort of. I bring up this for context also because it occurred to me that I should probably label the little pill bottle that I keep like the repair style baking soda in, because it looks like cocaine. It's like, essentially, I have on my desk a like prescription pill bottle with no label on it, with a white powder on it, making it even worse. I want to paint a picture for you because I actually took a picture of it because I have to post this on Instagram. I'll share it with you. Not only that, but I have this awesome like two, three dozen like dental tools like in a couple of drawers.
Yes, I know about that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so when I need a small spade like tool that's perfect for tapping and like sort of sprinkling a small amount of baking soda over the thing, I can find exactly what I need, and it does look like a Coke spoon. So essentially, to the left of my keyboard at the big desk is what looks like a suspicious vial of cocaine, what looks like a powder dusted cocaine spoon, and some loose cocaine on the desk. So this is why I've reminded myself that I need to label that thing so that, or at least like maybe just like make sure I keep the tube of super glue like rubber banded to the side of this when I'm not using it, so people don't immediately go to, oh, he's a writer, he Hunter S. Thompson's way through the day like most weekdays. Okay, but here's what I'm getting at. As careful as you can be with super glue, some of it will get on your fingers. I didn't get my fingers stuck to anything. That was fine. Okay. However, here comes the tip. Okay. Make sure, like right now, like, or not if you're driving, but as soon as you can, if you use fingerprint unlock on whatever device you have, register the fingers on your other hand as well, or other fingers, because I have this small little coating of like super glue on the finger, on my fingertip and my thumb tip that I usually use to unlock my phone, and they don't work anymore. However, boy, did I feel like a clever boots when I thought, oh dear, I'm gonna have to type. Oh no, wait a minute. I also registered the index finger, the thumb of my left hand as well. So I was not screwed. This is also helpful if, like, you're holding something with the other hand, or you've got a glove on one hand. So you are going to do this eventually. Do it right now, because that way you will feel like a clever boots, because you will not be scuppered the time that you need to have a working fingerprint on your non-dominant hand.
Wait, so did you fix the desk?
Oh yes, I did. Yes.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. So the desk is fine.
And it's just like the little, like the keyboard, one half of the keyboard, like the feet on the stand. It folds out.
You can have
either the keyboard either flat on the desk, or you can have like little feet that kind of flip out.
Andy, I was imagining that this was the whole table you were fixing, and that you just had it on a stilt while you were. Sorry. Woo. That one went a little off for me, but can you blame us? Can you blame me?
It's been
us,
a week.
Me and my little selves. Anyway, well, Andy, I'm also curious why you think somebody would confuse that for cocaine, but.
Well, I'm a little bit, I'm not saying I'm paranoid about such things, but I grew up like as a little kid.
Let me paint
another picture for you. I grew, when I was watching television as a child, we're talking late 70s into the mid to late 80s, okay? When the sitcoms were king, and the driving event in most sitcoms were some sort of misunderstanding. I will give you an example. There's an episode of Three's Company in which Mr. Furley had done a favor for Jack, who is of course a professional chef, by purchasing for him a beautiful hand-thrown pottery cooking vessel. However, the cop or somebody, like, or one of the neighbors, like, listening in as he's explaining, like, what a great favor he did. Oh, I got you that pot. It's really, is it good stuff? Oh, the best. I got it in Mexico.
Yeah, then, that was a common joke.
And merry mix-ups occurred. So I'm imagining somebody seeing this on my desk. It doesn't help that also I have a Klein bottle. Cliff Stahl, a name that some of you will recognize, astronomer who wrote this wonderful book and has these wonderful videos. He has a side business from his astronomy and teaching, which is he builds glass Erlenmeyer flasks that are the mathematical quandary solid called the Klein ball. It's sort of like a Mobius strip, but only in 3D. Essentially, if you stretch out the neck of a flask, a clear glass flask, and bend it around so that it connects through the wall of the glass, but also connects to an opening in the bottom, is this curvy thing, okay? And maybe one half of 1% of the world will see that on a shelf in my office, think, oh wow, cool, you got a Klein bottle, where'd you get that, that's very interesting. Some will say, oh my god, it's a bong, what else could it be, it's got to be a bong. I can't believe that he's got a bong out where everybody can see it.
Well,
I might be paranoid, that you might be having a peek into my own anxieties here.
Yeah, I mean, listen. Okay, well, instead of anxieties, how about let's talk about frustrations?
Please.
Which is the emotion that I'm bringing to the table.
Which is an extroverted anxiety, I would like to say.
Oh, okay. Well, I am an ambivert. I need both.
Of course,
I need both. I require a lot of recharge time. So I got really frustrated because the other day I decided. So I actually went to San Francisco yesterday for a meeting, and I was in and out in 3 hours. Because I took public transit, but I took it halfway. How do I explain this? Instead of going to the station nearest to my house, I drove halfway to the nearest station to downtown Oakland so that I could hop on and only be on BART for, you know, a few, like the Trans Bay 2, basically. So, yeah, because there's only parking in some of the BART stations, for those who are wondering. And so I decided that I wanted to take BART, but I didn't want to take it for a whole hour. I just wanted to take it for 20 minutes. So, okay, so that's neither here nor there. But, you know, it requires that I have music and podcasts listened to for the 20-minute drive to the BART station. And it's when I realized I've been having a lot of issues with the Google Assistant since I installed Gemini and then uninstalled it. I toggle it off as the default. And now my anchor Rove bolt, which is the little adapter that you plug into your cigarette lighter in older cars, and it right. streams the Google Assistant, streams music. It stopped accepting Hey G from me. And this is so frustrating because I need hands-free access to like the three things, which is I need you to shuffle a song, I need you to change directions for me, or I need to call somebody. I just need these three things constantly accessible. And I just kind of spiraled a little bit because, I mean, I think that maybe going in and resetting it will probably fix my issue. I think mm-hmm. it's just I've been futzing around too much with the settings lately because I've been doing some stuff on Android. So maybe I'll be able to fix it. But it also reminded me that I'm already miffed that they took away the assistant driving mode, which was built into Google Maps. And what they had done is they had moved it off the Android Auto team into the assistant team to manage. But then with all the layoffs that happened and the restructuring that was happening at Google, they decided, well, this probably doesn't need to have the development team it did on it. So let's dissolve that team and just instead what they have is if you have Spotify playing or any other media player app, it will give you the little play and skip navigation buttons at the bottom. Mm-hmm. But if you tap to like try and change a playlist, you'll no longer interact with what used to be like a small version of Android Auto.
Oh, yeah.
So instead, what it'll do is it will put Google Maps navigation into a picture-in-picture, make it really small, and then take you to the Spotify app so that you can look through your playlists. Now, I want you to imagine that this is all happening on a 6.2-inch display while I am driving 70 miles an hour, right? And don't wag your finger at me about, like, what are the speed limits, okay? Everybody speeds on this one highway, but it's neither here nor there again. It's really frustrated me. I don't know that I really want to get an Android Auto situation in my car. I have a 15-year-old car, and it's not because the car is old. Actually, it's because the car is old. There's a new movement where you try and keep the oldest car you have, like the oldest, nicest car you have, mm-hmm. intact. And I kind of want to keep it intact now and see how long I could just like hold the car as it came from, you know, the dealership way back in the early 2000s.
The name of this movement is the economy.
Well, no, I'm saying that when I eventually do graduate to get a new car, which I will need a new one eventually. I live in the Bay Area. I don't want to sell my car because now I just like to look on Instagram and TikTok at cars that people have saved. This is my car from high school. I still have it. Anyway, I think that's an elder millennial thing that we're doing as we're like aging. I mean, every generation did it. They all held on to their cars. Anyway, this is all to say, I've just been really frustrated. I just feel like stuff has been breaking a lot more on Android. I've been feeling like, I posted to TikTok last week, rest in peace, about how Quick Share wasn't working for me. So ever since the Samsung makeover, so when they decided to make Nearby Share into Quick Share, I have found that it's just not working as even the beta was working really darn well for me between Windows, PC, and Android, which is where I use Quick Share the most.
Right.
And for some reason last week, it wasn't working on Android. It wasn't working on Windows. And I was just sour about it because I've been running into these little trip ups in my user experience. And it's starting to make me think, you know, I mused out loud. Is this ending my marriage to Android? Because like we've been married.
I'm so with you on this because
I've been monogamous.
I've been sleeping around with iOS and macOS and Unix.
It's called a polycule.
Exactly.
Okay. As long as everybody
you don't have to understand it works for us, and that's all that matters. We're not asking you to condone us or support us, just not interfere with anyway.
Yeah, don't be a jerk about it.
Don't foresee switching back from Android to the iPhone from Android anytime soon. I'm very happy with Android. I'm happy with the direction that Google is taking Android, the operating system, and the Pixel line. I can't imagine Apple coming up with anything in the next 2 or 3 years that would shake me from that. Okay. However, the one thing that I miss is that because they do own the entire widget, they have such ironclad control over the hardware, the software, the proprietary protocols, the app stack, everything. Little things tend to work flawlessly. And it's these little things that work flawlessly that I miss still in Android. And I'll give the name to my pain currently. It's Chromecast. Okay. I've been listening to a lot of music. Update on last week's existential crisis about, but what if I switch, if I do switch to Plex Amp on my phone as my music player and get rid of my Walkman, stop using my Walkman. Who am I? What am I? It's worked out great. I was actually listening to music truly all day long, and today was a long work day and I loved it. However, I start my work day like in bed for the first hour, like just getting used to the idea that the world is out there and I need to be in it. And so I will just simply I'll start up at maybe listening to music while I read comics and stuff like that. And I'll have to like at some point move from like the bedroom to the bathroom to shower and shave and stuff like that. Okay. I've got enough speakers that it works. Okay. But every single time I even consider saying, okay, Chromecast, I'm going to tap this button and ask you, please, to switch the output from the nice Google Home Max speaker in the bedroom to the smaller Google Home speaker in the bathroom. And I really don't want you to get upset about this. If you have issues, if you have anxieties, worries, frustrations, I hope that you're mature enough that you can sit and talk to me about it, that you're not going to just simply decide to not talk to anything. And even when I try to switch back to the original speaker, not be able to do that, and also trick my music player app into thinking it's still connected, even though it clearly is not, and then force me to force quit apps, turn things on and off again to get you to essentially start your day with a brand new way, with a clear head and a bushy tail. I don't want to have to. There are times where if I'm having a really bad day, and I acknowledge that this happens, this is a mindset that I'm not proud of, that I will. One of the benefits or distractions of living alone is that most of the time when I'm alone here, I can say, yes, of course. You know, I what can I do, Android sharing feature, to help you? You're having a problem right now. I'm here to help you through it. An outside observer would think that your purpose is to help me relax by playing music, but no. That's 1992 thinking. I'm here to fix the problems of my software and the hardware. That's what I'm here for. I'm like those horribly treated servants in Upstairs, Downstairs, and Downtown Jesus. Alley. Yes, my identity is there to be of service to the noble gentry of this mansion. Okay. And I resent it. Yeah. Okay, I sometimes resent it. Then of course I get better and say, okay, come on, this is an inanimate object. It's not trying to get to you or anything. Just, you know, cool your jets. You're supposed to be older and more mature with this. But again, I do sometimes enjoy that 8 second. Of course, I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you through your problems. You're not here to help me get through a stressful time of the day. That was silly of me to even worry about that.
We'll see. I have a feeling that this is not the last of my kvetching about the Google Assistant and how it's going down the drain. Going down the drain. Not to be even more depressing, but we're going to go ahead and segue to today's show because this is actually very related. This drain going down of. I don't know if you've heard.
Before you listeners like get ahead of us, Google's quarterly results call is next week. So we're not like saying, we're not giving you a tease to how bad the call that was today went, because that's next week.
I see what
you're
saying. Just want to make sure you know. You're saying the earnings call is not being flushed down the toilet.
We're not saying the company is flushing itself financially down the toilet because of, I mean, maybe you, hey, you, we present the facts, you come up with your own opinion. We'll share ours, but I'm sorry, but I'm getting ahead. I'm interrupting you. Go ahead, please.
It's okay. Well, they are telling their employees that, listen, people, there's a culture change happening here and y'all need to get on board or find a new job. We're going to talk about that. It's coming from our two favorites, Sundar Pichai and Prabhakar Raghavan, aka Google's vice president in charge of almost everything that makes money. And indeed, he only wants things that make money. Sundar also used some of his time to talk indirectly to the Google employees who protested last week as a part of what was kind of a wave of protesting happening across the globe, actually. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And if you're still feeling emotionally attached to Chrome support of third-party cookies, there's good news. It's not going away anytime soon. Literally anytime soon. You don't think about this for another year.
All of those marketing companies and data brokers are going to be right there up in your business where they belong, where you can count on them to always be.
That's right. Just not on TikTok because it got banned or something. And also, before we go, we're going to try Google's new little handbook that teaches us how to talk to Gemini AI. This one's going to be really helpful for me. For those who are staying on, by the way, we've got a fun little members-only episode coming up at the very end of this. If you are a member, you can just stay to the end to listen to it. If you are not a member, you can go to relay.fm/material or relay.fm/membership to learn more about how to become a member of this wonderful podcast network and support us and the other podcasts on this network so that you can get a bunch of bonus content. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't like a bonus in this economy? Please. Toss it over. Okay, let's take a quick little break. Well, this is going to be a section that may or may not enrage you if you're currently angry at your boss. Let me tell you, the Google that we are about to read about is not the Google that you were used to hearing about. This isn't the happy California hippie days of Google hiring the band Cake to come and perform for everybody and giving out free devices.
Two awkward, nerdy Stanford grad students in a garage. Pursuing a dream and a night. No,
everybody here voted for Obama. It's great. We're all on the same page. No, sweeties, things are changing. There's no more evidence of that than Prabhakar Raghavan's all-hands meeting that he hosted last month for 25,000 Google employees, all of which he manages. So that's fun. Okay, so CNBC, they're very good at getting, by the way, if you hear sounds in the background, I'm sorry. It's because my chair is uncomfortable. I'm having a hard time sitting in the chair. I'm sorry.
Can I say that you have accidentally provided an excellent teaser for the bonus episode content? I don't want to spoil it for you or anybody else, but this remember, chairs.
Relay.fm/membership if you want to find out more. All right, so CNBC, they got audio of this meeting, which is always the best way to listen into what's going on. Their report makes the meeting sound like it was one of those family meetings where everybody goes to the living room and talks about, no summer vacations, extra new clothes, random trips to the mall.
And Kelly, if you really, really want a new iPhone, don't think that if you accidentally lose or break it, we're just going to buy you the new iPhone. That means that we're going to go to the store and get you a contract candy bar phone because we can't spend another $800 for a new phone. Just preemptively.
No, at that point, you just give them an AirTag and you say, this is what you did to yourself. And this is all you get now. So just stand in one corner if you need me to come pick you up. Now you know how Mono's going to get it. Anyway, so he actually spent a little over, we're talking about Raghavan again. He spent a little over half an hour itemizing all of the challenges that Google and its employees are facing today, many of which are just strong financial headwinds that we got to ride out.
The unprecedented macroeconomic environment, coupled with the immense opportunities available to Google and Alphabet because of the shift to AI, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, he said something that I'm sure made all the elder millennials quiver with fear. He said, I think we can agree that things are not like they were 15 to 20 years ago. Things have changed. He was talking about Google's search business, but we could also just talk about how time flies when you're living. Now, when he described Google's digital ad business as the envy of the world, he wouldn't allow the good vibes to linger after that. So it was kind of one of those, let me give you a little bit of carrot, but when you come to take a bite of the carrot, I'm going to whack you with a stick to remind you, it's not like life is going to be hunky-dory forever.
Unquote.
Direct quote. Yes.
That was such a so many of these pull quotes. They're such like dad or mom at the serious family meeting sort of things. It's like, well, you know, I mean, you might feel as though you've been on one of the blessed people right now with all these things and the foofaries that you had, but it doesn't last like that forever. You know, the times can change.
There's got to be a better way to say this than he was. It's just...
It does sound like a boomer.
It gets worse. It gets worse. Okay, so we're going to give you a whole quote right here from the CNBC article. "We're in a new cost reality," Raghavan said. "With generative AI, the company is spending a ton more on machines," he said. "Organic growth is slowing and the number of new devices coming into the world is not what it used to be," Raghavan said. "What that means is our growth in this new operating reality has to be hard earned." Oof, I don't like that. I don't like being told that I'm not working hard enough to earn it. I don't like that. I get what he is saying. From a platform standpoint, I understand what he is saying from a competition standpoint. And I'm sure the shareholders are like, that's exactly what we've been asking for. We're like, finally. But as a worker, I would really hate to hear this because this would upset me because I would feel like, dude, you think I'm not already working my butt off for you? I'm projecting. But
and just to be fair, that from the CNBC article and other places that I've read, I haven't been able to see the entire transcript, but that in context, that would probably come across a lot softer than we're making it sound. It's not, it wasn't a rallying cry. You stiffs, you layabouts, you easy drifters, you easy riders, you long hairs, you lackadaisicals, and other things that Mr. Burns from The Simpsons might say to Homer Simpson. It was more like, you know, we're all going to have to like, we can't take our foot off the gas for 1 second, which is, but looking off most of the quotes, most of these things are things that someone who is paid, whose compensation package is well into the millions, who, if they were to decide, gosh, this is way too much pressure, they could stop working anytime and have millions and millions of dollars in which they could spend the rest of their lives doing absolutely anything they want, as opposed to when it's being heard by engineers that are probably being paid extremely well, but If things go badly, then I could be out of work, and this expensive real estate that I have to keep my family living in is going to be way too expensive for us. We're going to have to move, and I'm going to feel as though incorrectly, but I'm going to feel as though part of this is my fault for not working hard enough to make Google successful, a company that I don't have part ownership in. So this is why if you're in that kind of like a super leadership position, and Prakafar is definitely. If there are like 10 people that you could name who keep Google and Alphabet running, he is on that list, despite being at the VP level and not the C title sort of level. So when someone like him is saying that we're all going to have to work really, really hard, and he can mean it and say that, well, I'm feeling a lot of pressure. I'm working very, very hard too. But he has to, if it's hard to, for someone in that position to appreciate how that is heard by someone who is making $140,000 a year, thinks that they're lucky to be employed and is desperate to like make it to the next 8 years, hopefully, before they can even consider like a job or lifestyle change.
Well, back to Raghavan, he said further on in the meeting that new regulations in the EU were a bummer. And then he repeated a lot of vague management retreat style messaging that Google and Apple's senior leadership has been leaning on for the past couple of years. It's very frustrating. It seems to boil down to get used to working harder and doing more with fewer resources, which I'm sure is something that a lot of us can relate to right now, the economy and the way it is right now. A direct quote from him, "If there's a clear and present market reality, we need to twitch faster, like the athletes twitch faster." Now that really bothered me again. That really bothered me, okay? Because which athletes are we talking about? Are we talking about U.S. athletes? Are we talking about Russian athletes who are often just abused into the gold medals that they get? Okay, I can go ahead and say that. It's all bad out there. I don't know if that's the best metaphor to be making. And then he went on to make some specific announcements about where the company is going to go, how it's going to refocus to make sure that everybody still has a job at the end of the day. So he said the company plans to build teams closer to Google's users in the key markets of India and Brazil. This has been a long time coming. of course they would want to do this if they can establish brand loyalty in these countries with giant populations. That ensures that they have a good chunk of the market just based on body count. Sorry to put it that way, but
remember that before Sundar Pichai's mantra was AI, AI, mm-hmm. AI. It was the we're going to try to, we need to get the next billion users. Yep. And a lot of good things came from that, but that's India, that we haven't heard from that for a while. Yeah,
a lot of Android users in Brazil for that reason. He's also going to start giving the managers who report to him less time to complete certain projects. So that's like, that's where the twitching apparently comes into play here.
I know if I were one of his direct reports, I'd be twitch. My eyes would be twitching right now.
Yeah, he said there's something to be learned from that faster twitch, shorter wavelength execution, which to me, I had made a note in our notes, like, is this just his version of move fast, break things?
Yeah, this is the sort of thing that, like, I'm not used to hearing from executives who work at that level. This is like almost a Michael Scott style of management saying, just think about the athletes who move fast and react quickly. Yeah. We've got to learn from their example, saying, okay, but I'm telling you that when I told you that getting this project done is going to require three quarters of the business year, it wasn't because I had one quarter set aside for playing Pokemon Go. It's because I'm sure it's going to take us three quarters. And if you tell us to get it done in two quarters time, we can move the post-it note on the calendar where the deadline is. Doesn't mean we're going to make the deadline, but wishing it with a lame metaphor doesn't make it so is the problem that a lot of managers don't understand.
Sorry to groan into the microphone, but this also means I'm groaning as a user. To me, this also means I want you to move a little faster to push out things, which as a user worries me. Okay.
Yeah.
That worries me. Now he did offer some praise. Okay. AI is the big thing right now. So of course the Gemini team got a lot of praise. Ugh. He said that in the face of Gemini's shaky public debut, the team stepped up from working a mere 100 hours a week to working 120 hours a week to improve the image recognition tool. By the way, do you know how bad I feel now using Circle to search, knowing like so many people had to work late nights, missed like bath time with their babies, missed walks with their dog, missed like cuddles with their cats? Like these are all incredibly important parts of life, and not having those things to balance and regulate you is criminal, quite frankly. It's like
divide 100 by 7 and you get a number that is larger than 10, which means that for more than 10 days, 20 hours out of every single day, they were working on Gemini, and then they bumped that up to 120 hours a week. And that's now, I want to make sure the context is clear. He wasn't saying that, oh, well, they covered for their screw up by finally working hard. He actually explicitly said that doesn't mean that they were slacking off before. I'm praising them for having worked, so putting in 100 hours a week before. And I'm astoundedly proud and happy that they put in another 20 hours. But the thing is, what people there is a problem with a lot of corporate culture, particularly in America, that is. And it's called, you know, it's called the grind, worshiping the grind, being, hey, using it as sort of social currency within the culture that, oh, well, you only worked 70 hours. I worked 80 hours. Oh, well, of course, I had 80 hours because I had just had a kid last week. But next week, I'll be back to 130 hours. When really the sensible thing for anybody to expect is you are here on a 40-hour-a-week contract. I'm sure that there are times where either because you feel inspired or because we are kind of in a crunch, we would be thrilled if you found another 10 or 20 hours on a rare basis, but you cannot sustainably expect people to work 100 hours a week adding the exclusion on a company that they don't partially own. Okay. I'm sure I work more than 100 hours a week. Okay. I may be boasting here, but yeah, I work more than 40 hours a week on my stuff, but this is all stuff that I own and I create and I personally benefit from. I'm not stealing time away from my kids, my parents, my spouse, my personal interests, my sleep, my religious obligations to myself and to my vision of God to prop up not just the profits of a company, but the growth of a company. And remember that we're not talking about, well, Google is having another bad quarter and they're thinking that they might have to like split up or shut down parts, many divisions because they keep losing money. No. As we will find out next week in the analyst call, they're still making huge profits. The only question is, Are they growing as a company at as great a rate that the analysts hope that they will? So the idea of burying yourself 120 hours a week, not to keep your job and your friends and your coworkers' jobs viable, but also just simply to make sure the numbers are good, that must seem galling. That means that I will pitch in for the team on a very limited basis, so long as the answer to the question, when are you hiring enough people that I can go back to 40, 50 hours a week, is a firm date and a promise and maybe a couple of pizza coupons, like $200 for the pizza coupons, to basically say, I've taken money out of my own pocket to buy you pizza for the next 2 months, not to help you get through this thing, but basically to say, yes, we realize there's a tangible thing here. Anyway, that's...
Nobody should be asking you to work 100 hours a week.
That's insane.
I'm
sorry. It's not sustainable.
I don't care how much you get paid. Yeah. I do not care how much you get paid. Okay. Nobody. Ugh. It's very upsetting. Anyway, he did say that he was going to work on eliminating middle management. So I think that made some Googlers a little happy. He said the number of agreements and approvals it takes to bring a good idea to market, that's not the Google way. That's not the way we should be functioning.
At least not the way we say it out loud. We do say that quietly. And that's what all of our employees, too many of our employees have been saying to The Verge and to other members of the press about why Google is losing ground to everybody else. But it's good to hear someone at his levels acknowledge that, say something tangible that they are working to fix that, and at least hold up some expectations that is not going to be a permanent part of Google culture.
Yeah. Well, now we should get into what Sundar Pichai told in a note to employees. So if that didn't annoy you or upset you, wait until we read you some more. This was a bummer. So Sundar Pichai sent a note to employees describing what the Google blog wrote as a number of structural changes to improve velocity and execution across the company. I just want to say, watching Sundar Pichai unfold as an executive in the last couple of years, this is the coldest I've seen him in a while. This is very, very lacking any sort of human touch to it. A word like velocity and execution is, those are harsh words. That is he's putting out a persona that is like, I've decided that I need to do this if I'm going to keep my job. So I'm going to use these words.
Yeah, it's hard for someone at the top of a company who is supposed to project confidence, ability, direction, to rely on really clinical buzzwords like that. And also, I should point out that whereas on Prabhakar Raghavan's all hands meeting, that was an in-person and streamed meeting. CNBC had audio of it. They didn't publish a full transcript, so we can only guess as to what was left out or any context that was left out. Whereas this was a quote note to employees unquote, but which was also posted on the Google blog in full. So we can see this, what Sundar said, or excuse me, what went under his signature from start to finish, and knowing that this went through a lot of approvals and a lot of edits, this is, we know everything in context, and we know that what was said in this note to employees was A, exactly what he intended to communicate, and B, the fact that this wasn't a leak, this was something that they put on their blog, meant that this is a message that they're sending to analysts, to investors, not coincidentally, only a couple of weeks. This was posted last week, just a couple of weeks before the analyst call. So yeah, this was, how much of this is directed at the employees, and how much of this is just a quiet way of, again, reassuring analysts that, hey, we are a $1 trillion company. We're not two hippies in a garage. We are responsible, and we look at the spreadsheets and we look at the numbers, and that's how we make our decisions, not passion or goals or things like that. Our only goal is to deliver value for shareholders. That's the impression that you kind of get. It's not the sort of thing that stirs the troops to going above and beyond or to applying their greatest creative skills towards inventing new solutions.
So the scope of this letter was to pretty much get folks up to speed inside, outside the company, right? Analysts and investors are going to be reading this. We're going to read a couple of those changes, but you should know that they were kind of split up into four parts. So they are making changes to models in research, responsible AI, which Okay. Platforms and devices, which I'll tell you why that one bums me out. Yeah. And then the mission statement. Okay. So for models and research, Google's consolidating all of the teams that work on foundation AI models into Google DeepMind. It's because DeepMind has been given a stronger mandate to continue fundamental research. And so they want this to be a part of the DNA. They want the investors and the analysts to see that this is where the work is being put. So,
but that's also good news. Full stop. Because this and a couple of other things he said in this note are about, okay, we are actually removing bureaucracy. We are making sure that the teams that, for instance, in under responsibility and safety, we talked a while ago about a potentially troubling piece of news that the responsible AI team had been, like, not necessarily disbanded, but dispersed to other places. And so it turns out that they're moving the responsible AI teams. I'm quoting the note here. They're moving the responsible AI teams and other responsibility teams around in the org chart so that they're physically closer to the engineers who are building the things that those teams are supposed to be overseeing. And so, like, the idea of saying, well, let's have all of our AI consolidated within DeepMind so that there's no dotted line to another org chart to find out that, hey, here's an opportunity where we can make Gemini work better with Pixel Buds. What if that's all, like, those teams are adjacent to each other and they don't have to navigate like another fiefdom in order to make their intentions and their desires known? So a lot of this stuff does seem to directly address complaints that a lot of Googlers had been leaking to the press in the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of responsibility and safety, Google is moving existing responsible AI teams and other responsibility teams in the org chart so that they're closer to the engineers who are building those things that they're supposed to be overseeing, that they're supposed to be responsible for, right? And Pichai wrote, these shifts create clearer responsibility and accountability at every level as we build and deploy and strengthen the feedback loop between models, products, and users. And I think they're also hoping that this will help improve Gemini somewhat. Okay, the big news is under computing platforms and devices. This is the one where there's some sads. Okay, so first of all, Google's creating a new product area called platforms and devices. It's not totally new. Those of us who've been following Android for a long time, this feels like a natural evolution of where things are going and the way that, you know, Chrome OS, Android, they've all kind of been coupled in. Jeez, that plane is so close. Sorry, guys. I live so close to an Air Force base, and sometimes, and they practice over my house, and it's like some junior pilot. Anyway, it just creeps me out.
You should arrange the words "Go Navy" in your backyard in rocks so they can read it.
Ugh, it's so loud. It's just like reverberating the Boeing. Okay, back to platforms and devices. So. As I mentioned Chrome OS. So here's what platform and devices includes. It includes the Pixel line, of course, and related hardware, Android, Chrome OS, the Chrome browser, Google Photos, and Google One. Of course, other things that could be considered like a platform, right? Chrome browser is a platform.
Yeah, I think the collective commonality here is things that are more consumer facing. Like things that your average person like interacts with or buys or subscribes to or clicks on, that's a Google product, as opposed to the cloud stuff, as opposed to the research stuff, that kind of area.
Oh my God, it was a Lockheed C5M Super Galaxy. God, that was so loud.
How did you get that information so quickly? You have a...
Oh, I pay for Flight Radar.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah, because I'm a nerd and I like to plane watch.
Well,
okay.
Well, also that's just smart because one of these days that could be one of them commie interceptors going over your house, and you're going to want to know about that.
Hey, I know what's going on in the air above me. Okay. Sorry. Back to Google, everyone. Side note: I love airplanes. But back to Google. Now, unsurprisingly, this platform and devices team, the product area, is going to be led by who else? Rick Osterlo. We all know him as the VP, who's the reason we have the Pixel phones we have now. I know him as the man who helped launch the first Motorola smartwatch with Android Wear on it. I remember meeting him even back then.
Me too. He was one of the people like at Motorola that like was very, very available and also willing to talk like in a meaningful way. And I liked interacting with him, A, because he seemed like a nice guy and a straightforward guy. And rather than BS you, he would say, "Oh, well, I can't talk about that." But you could,
which is like, yeah, yeah.
And he seemed to know what he was doing. So yeah.
Which I wonder if that metaphor about the athletes came from. Maybe it was made for Rick Ostolo to be like, "Do you see how those basketball players train?"
maybe it was like that line. The writers pitched that line to Rick, and he said, "Yeah, I'm not saying any of that." And then Prabhakar said, "Me? That sounds." Or Sundar said, "That sounds like a Jim Dandy way for me to sound like a human being and not an artificial AI-driven robot, which I am not."
Well, thank you, Andy, for making me chuckle a bit, because now I'm going to cry. So here's the sad news about the platforms and devices. So you may recall that Hiroshi Lockheimer, one of the founders of Google's Android, he was the vice president of these so-called platforms, Chrome OS, Android. But Sundar Pichai actually said in the note that Hiroshi will advise on the transition, even if as he starts to work on some new projects across Alphabet, which sounds to me, and I think I can offer this. I think this is something I can do. So like I always make a point to go say hello to Hiroshi when I see him at the events, because he was very kind to me.
Yeah.
Over the years.
He did. He actually guested on this show, like one of the early shows, like the 50s or 60s. Yeah. We should ask him back.
And he guested on All About Android.
He has a little bit more free time now. He might be able to accept our invitation.
But here's what I am going to say. And this is totally a flow opinion. Okay. This is me editorializing an opinion. But he looked tired. Like, and I'm not saying this as a like, "Oh, the new mom looks tired." I'm saying it like how I've been feeling burnt out. As we all know, I did go on medical leave last year. How I've been feeling burnt out. I feel a kinship with him in the burning out-ness.
So sometimes you look at someone and you sense that they've been carrying that sword and that shield for a very, very long time. And they would very much like to put them down. Yeah.
And so when I read this, I was like, "Oh, I hope that this means that he's scaling back his work so that," because think about it. Like Hiroshi has done a lot of the hard stuff already. Like he set the basis for this platform. My fear is without any original Android people, which I know there are a couple on the engineering team, like David Burke and a couple other folks. I just worry that when the originators start to leave, that you start to lose.
Yeah.
The reason that you were all there in the first place. And so that's what I was kind of trying to bring across at the chat, the start of the episode, is that I'm really scared that like the restaurants in San Francisco, everything is going to change hands and it's not going to be the same operating systems and platforms that I have relied on these last 12 years.
Yeah, it's there's something so valuable but completely indefinable about the character about a company or a product or the philosophy behind a product, that once you've lost the last person who helped build it originally, you lose that information. You lose that sense of, to put it in a less tech way, like I read comics and sometimes, and you have these characters that have been around for like 30, 40, 50 years. And like, you don't know, and there are people who have been working on writing this character for 20, 30 years or editing this character. They know what Spider-Man will and will not do. They know what the Fantastic Four would get involved with, what arguments they would have within each other, ways which they back each other up. And then there are people that are just writers who say, "Ooh, here are four characters that I can do. I have these ideas. I've had these ideas of what I would do if I wrote a comic book."
Four seasons of Iron 2.0. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So like it sounds weird to redirect that towards something as technical as a phone operating system, but it is still a creative endeavor, particularly the user interface and the design language. And so if you get someone who is on their third or fourth or fifth or sixth system engineering project, and they have an idea or a solution to something that's very convenient and very, very efficient, but it doesn't work with material. Here's a philosophy that was at there are eight different takeout dinners at a conference room that lasted well into the night with lots of people having amazing conversations about what material design meant. And what you weren't in on any of that stuff, and you haven't talked to anybody who was in on that stuff, so you don't understand that. Yes, you think that getting rid of this button design is just, well, you don't like it, but however, this is part of the conversation. I will not continue on like 10 minutes about this, but it's when you're listening to like interviews with people who like who are on in the office or Seinfeld or something.
Yeah. Or 90210.
Yeah. Or now that Curb Your Enthusiasm is over, one of the actors, like one of the supporting actors, like had like a GQ, like one of those videos in which they talk for 20 minutes and show clips. And I thought that he was just really, really funny, a really, really great character. But he was talking about and we know that this show is almost entirely improv. So, oh, wow, he's just thinking of stuff when he's talking about. No, in this scene, I was trying to figure out where this character comes from. And he would not react that way. He would not have taken umbrage by the fact that this building, I'm making something up, that this building collapsed and like he's out of a home. He's taking umbrage at the fact that that wasn't the first thing that somebody asked him about, that they asked him about like how his friends were and how his family were. And like, that is somebody who understands the character, who when a writer, if a writer were to tell Rainn Wilson to, here's a page of dialogue for Dwight Schrute, he can say that I've been playing this character for 7 seasons now. That is not how Dwight would react to that situation. He would be making fun of someone who reacts to that situation. Here's how Dwight would react to that situation. And in creative realms like that, Rainn Wilson would be honored, saying, okay, well, you know more about this character than this person who came in to write this one script. Whereas in engineering, it can be, well, we hired this guy for $250,000 out of Apple. He's now in charge of this group. So if he decides that Dwight Schrute is going to start like planting flowers and doing bonsai, that's what you're doing. If you don't like it, Rain, go ahead and leave.
Now, here's how the Google culture is going to change. That was under the new mission statements. So Sundar Pichai acknowledged that Google's culture of vibrant, open discussion is still part of its culture a bit, but there's a but. We're going to read this whole quote here. Ultimately, we are a workplace and our policies and expectations are clear. This is a business and not a place to act in a way that disrupts coworkers or makes them feel unsafe. To attempt to use the company as a personal platform or to fight over disruptive issues or debate politics, this is too important a moment as a company for us to be distracted. Anybody else out there thinking about what I'm thinking? Which is about the, 28 Google employees who were let go because of their sit-in protests that they were a part of last week.
Yep. And again, shall we clarify that this note was posted to the blog one day after those protests and the firings.
Correct. So it all seems, it's just my chair, everyone. It all seems, what a great way to diffuse such a serious thing. Yeah, it's all just, this sounded like one giant warning to the rest of the company that, like, listen, really do not care about which side you're on right now. We really need to make money. And if that's not your number one focus, we are going to fire you.
Yeah.
Which, like, y'all, at the end of the day, that's the company's, not that the company are people, but it's their right to say that because they do. The bottom line is money at the end of the day. Like, you may have a mission statement about, oh, we're going to index the world's information. Oh, you know, we're going to connect people. Like, here's what we do with our technology. But at the end of the day, it's just to make the shareholders some money so that they feel like it's coming back to them.
And I do think there are a few layers to that kind of a statement that this is a business because in almost all contexts, that is a true story. That's a true statement. And especially when it comes from the CEO of the parent company, that is a statement that, look, we don't care what you do outside of your work for us.
Right.
Okay. I mean, we don't even necessarily care if it's illegal or not. However, we are not in the business of like, if you're going to conduct activities like on the Google campus that disrupt other workers, that disrupt that disrupt our projects, that put certain make things unsafe or just simply make schedules fragile, we do care about that because this is a business. If you want to sell Girl Scout cookies for your kids' Girl Scout troop on our campus, I don't know if there's a policy about that, but it's like, fine, do it during your lunch hour, do it after work hours, that's fine. If you're taking up company resources, don't do that. We are a business. We are not in the business of selling Girl Scout cookies. You should be doing your job instead of that.
Too bad.
However, that oftentimes can collide with a lot of feelings that a lot of individuals have and have the right to have. We should be specific. There are 28 Google employees that were fired the day before because they took place in some sit-ins and protests in the New York City Google offices and the Sunnyvale Google offices. A bunch of people basically did stage a sit-in, including one of the offices of Google Cloud CEO, and did not leave for 10 hours. They said they were not going to leave until Google agrees to cancel a contract they had recently signed along with Amazon to provide $1.2 billion worth of various services to Israel's military and government. And there are a lot of feelings about that, but that's neither here nor there. What he was making a clear statement that we've talked about it on this podcast over nearly 500 episodes, all kinds of instances where Google displayed its culture of free speech. You have an opinion, you can share it, you can discuss it. We're like a college university campus where we want the flow of ideas and exchange of opinions to be open. Very famously in 2018, there were a lot less dramatic protests that happened when Google was bidding on a contract with the United States Defense Department to provide software and AI services to the military. And Google's protesters collectively said, no, we're not busting our butts to create AI so that you can weaponize it in a drone or something like that. And after a lot of discussion, and most of these protests and discussion happened on like Google's private message boards and private social media services. Okay. And that ended with Google saying, okay, we have heard you. And we are going to have a policy moving forward that we will not use our technology on any weaponry. We will continue to have contracts with governments and military organizations. However, we will not be empowering weapons of war with our technology. And I think that 2018 was near the start of Sundar Pichai's tenure as the head of all heads. And I'm not sure how he felt about that decision back in 2018. How six years have passed. It's a different Sundar Pichai, different company, different world. And he was very, very clearly saying that, no, if you're here to work, we don't care about your opinion on any political issue. But you leave it. You're not here to express your political opinions or disturb other people with your political opinions or protests. You're here to do your work. We will expect you to do your work. We should wrap this up. Google did make the statement that they didn't just simply like to quiet dissent, start firing people. Not every person who existed in the sit-in was a Google employee. However, 28 of them, the 28 people who were fired, Google said they were fired because we have corporate employee policies. They violated those policies. They blocked access to parts of the campus. I'm sure I could find the quote later on here. Their behavior was unacceptable, extremely disruptive, and made coworkers feel threatened. Okay, that's fine. And for that reason, they fired these specific 28 people. But I think it is part of what we've been talking about throughout the show that Sundar Pichai is kind of a no fun dad. he is one of the progenitors of the policy.
Love to ask his children what he's really like.
Yep. I mean, he is one of the progenitors of the thing that, yeah, you know what, this idea that we're going to have internet on balloons at flyover and create internet where it needs to be, that because it was a fun research project, yeah, we can't spend money on that stuff anymore. Or at least the clock is ticking on your research to prove that we can turn this into a product. And if you can't turn it into a product within a certain timeline, we are cutting you off. We are ending the project. This is part of the statement that he feels he has to make to, again, to analysts, to investors, to say that we will continue to, we were not going to have, we're not going to We're going to be a very, very boring sense of management that will not make you scared of chaos happening inside the company. So anyway, and it's interesting.
It is interesting. And I vividly recall the podcast that we recorded in 2018 about all of that. So it makes it even more interesting. Well, after all of that, Andy, I feel like this is a good time for us to take a little bit of a break, bring some peace back into our lives now that we just have been letting managers yell at us, cosplaying as Google employees being scolded. Yeah, we'll be right back. Let's take a little break and recollect ourselves. I don't know if this is good news or bad news. It's just news. It's just Google was supposed to do something about all those third-party cookies that it was leaving behind to kind of like track and see what you were up to. And then they introduced this plan that they were going to eventually roll out, which would kill those third-party browser cookies and instead favor Google's own homegrown privacy sandbox sort of trackers. That idea also ruffled feathers because it meant that Google would essentially also be monopolizing.
they were throwing out an ad tracking system that they did not control, and maybe even genuinely because they thought they could replace it with something that users would have more control over and would limit the amount of information collected, replacing it with their own system that they offer to everybody. However, they certainly were not going to design a system that made their own ad business unfeasible. And the fact that they also have what is Chrome browser market share? Something like 82%. It's prohibitively the majority. So they have the ability to simply say, guess what? Suddenly 82% of all the web browsers in the entire world are not going to be able to do third-party cookies, and they are going to be able to do the ad tracking system that we have designed and approved of. I don't know why they thought that this... I think they expected some pushback. I think they did come up with this in 2018, 2019, before the unprecedented economic headwinds that Sundar Pichai keeps talking about. So maybe they're a little bit cocky at that point.
Macroeconomic. There's a blog post called Update on the Plan for Phase Out of Third-Party Cookies on Chrome. This is from the Privacy Sandbox team. And basically, they're pushing this rollout to 2025. No exact date, just kind of like 2025.
At the service,
Their quote was, "We recognize that there are ongoing challenges related to reconciling divergent feedback from the industry, regulators, and developers, and we'll continue to engage closely with the entire system. It's also critical that the CMA has sufficient time to review all evidence, including results from industry tests, which the CMA has asked market participants to provide by the end of June." Basically, they're waiting on government regulators and the rest of the digital ads industry.
This CMA refers to the UK's Competition and Markets Authority. As a matter of fact, the reason why they made this disclosure was because they were required to by the CMA. So,
well, at least I don't have to worry about that for another year.
Exactly.
I have a lot of stuff to worry about.
This at least like we know we won't run out of things to talk about in 2025.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, last things last. This one, I feel like, could morph into another one of those service journalism situations. So I guess Google realized that we have no idea how to really talk to Gemini. And so I think they decided in a team meeting somewhere of people who were left over. Actually, what am I saying? Those Gemini people are working 120 hours a week. So clearly in a team meeting, probably in the morning when they adjust what they just woken up after 4 hours of sleep, because that's all they've been getting.
They were told that if you come in early, there's going to be pastries at the meeting, but they were just like bagels and not the fun kind of bagels either. So everybody was a little bit upset, a little bit cranky.
Exactly. What was the point of me getting here on time? But they want to help us interact with their product. I'm sure they want their product to be used. So what they did is Google released a 45-page handbook to help us, the people, learn how to build successful prompts for Gemini's Google Workspace generative features. Now, I'm glad they finally did this, because I am literally paying for this stuff with Google One, and I'm thinking to myself, boy, I'd really like to make use of the stuff that I'm paying for, but I really have no idea how. Well, now there's a guide, 45-page one. It's an April 2024 edition, which tells you that it's like very brand new. It's very well presented and organized.
Actually, it's been updated. I think it was released like a couple of weeks ago. This is a cut and paste from last week's show doc. And can I also point out that it is, I wasn't being sarcastic. It is actually a very, very nice guide, not even necessarily for Gemini, but for all prompt generations. However, I have one beef with it. I was expecting like a link to, here's this great guy that we created. Here's a web page you can go.
Entering my information.
And click on this link and you can download the PDF. It's like, no, I had to provide like my name, like my company name, my phone number before I was provided with a download link. And that was like, really, Google? Like, A, as if you don't have that information already.
Yeah, I'm but logged B, in, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, and it wasn't like you need to log in with a Google account. It was like the form's like, oh, what's your phone number? It's like, why do you want my phone number? is this like where you enter a raffle or something and now you're going to be pelted with like sales calls about adjustable beds or something? It's like, no.
I was tapping away because I'm signing in to download this 45-page document. This reminds me a lot, by the way, when Google Chrome first launched and they did that Scott McCloud.
Like, yeah.
It, you know.
Comic book about Chrome.
Thank God Google still has some of this. But I think I'm probably going to load this onto the foldable and give it a read. Because I didn't realize that what I need to do is tell Gemini exactly what I do for a living and kind of like construct the scene for it. I just automatically assume because I'm logged in with my Google account that it should just know all this stuff about me.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't want to assume that. Maybe we don't want that.
Well, also, I was just thinking, like, have you ever, like, have you ever had like been at like a dinner party or like some sort of a gathering where you kind of know, there's some people you kind of know, but not extremely well. And you find yourself about to say, oh gosh, I've heard that like your kid's been like suspended like twice. I hope you're having, I know this, that must be rough before you say that. Oh, I bet she doesn't know that her friend told me about that and it would creep her out. It's a nice thing to say and maybe she needs someone to, but like, why do you know that? And why are you bringing that up now? I bet that Google's like, interface designers and designers for things like that. It's like, we could actually just populate these fields automatically, but maybe people would be super creeped out if we suddenly saw like, here's your address, here's your phone number.
Yeah. Well, give it a try. We'll put the download link in the show notes.
I will say it is a very, very good guide. Because it does, it's because a lot of people like when they don't understand that, I certainly didn't understand it at first, that you think that you just simply say, write me a business letter that explains how photosynthesis works in less than 400 words. And you can do that, and but you will be surprised and upset that it doesn't give you like really good results. You really do have to. My persona, like whenever I design or whenever I do prompts for almost anything, is I kind of feel as though like I'm directing a stage actor. Where I have to say, here's your character. Here's like what you do really, really well. I'm going to give you specific instructions on how to do something. I will tell you what a good result looks like, what a bad result looks like. And the guide really does a good job of breaking that down, of simplifying that you be clear about. They give a bunch of illustrations of here's some prompts. Here's a prompt that we will then cut into slices so you can see where we are, how we are building this with some of the lessons that we gave you in the previous chapter. So there's one guide's example. Most of the guide's examples are about like business sort of related stuff. Of course, it's for Google Workspace. But here, one of them is breaking down a successful prompt that will get Gemini to help a user craft a customer service response, that you're in charge of like sending you responding to customer service emails. And so it's every single one of these components of this prompt, help me craft an empathetic email response. And that's labeled, that's your task. I am a customer service representative. Here's your persona. Mm-hmm. Tell it who you are. And I need to create a response to a customer complaint. Once another task. Then you give the context. The the customer ordered a pair of headphones that arrived damaged. They've already contacted us via email and provided pictures of the damage. I've offered a replacement, but they're requesting an expedited shipping option that isn't typically included with their order. Then format, include a paragraph that acknowledges their frustration and three bullet points with potential resolutions. And that is supremely focused. Again, part of it is you are a customer service representative. Your tone is, you could add in, your tone is kind and friendly, very accessible, sentence structures that could easily be read and digested by anybody of any sort of level of reading comprehension. Do not assume that they've done anything wrong. Do not assume that they, all that sort of stuff. It's good stuff.
Well, if any of you out there want to let us know if this is working for you, let us know. You can let us know through social media. Andy and I are still on social media, by the way. We're just not on X.
Yes.
Our profiles are there, but we are not there. Isn't that right, Andy?
I go back. I hit X just long enough for X to say, oh, he's still an active user of some kind. I am not going to sell at Anatko on Twitter/X for $80 to any support garment manufacturer who wants to advertise, or any offshore sports betting app that wants to like tweet things through my account.
Oh goodness. Well, this is the end of our episode, Andy. So this is usually where you let us know if you're on radio this week.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I'm on radio tomorrow and I'm going to be talking about at least, I can't remember what the show doc was, what the rundown was exactly. I'm definitely talking about TikTok. I think there is one piece of Google News that we might get to. But as always, you can go to wgbhnews.org to stream it live, which is going to be, which you can't do because we will still be editing this episode. But if you go to wgbhnews.org and click on the link for Boston Public Radio, that show on Thursday, April 25th, you will be able to listen to that, and what I'm sure is going to be a largely great show. Oh, although I should warn you, I might get bumped tomorrow. I got a warning from my producer. It's like I am going to be open and embrace all of our listeners that there might be some people who are big fans of Donald Trump. We love you. We don't judge you.
I thought you were going to say Taylor Swift.
Oh no.
Gosh. Scared me. All right, keep going.
I can say that hopefully the only reason why you might be upset, that we all can be upset with Donald Trump, even the people who voted for him and are big fans of him, is that every time he gets into some sort of a legal trouble, chances of my being bumped from WGBH like double or triple. So the Supreme Court might issue a ruling, not a ruling, but basically say whether the schedule on a certain thing that they're going to be deciding about a certain Trump case, if that happens like before 1 p.m., then I'm probably going to be bumped. I'll still get paid. So the 6 hours or 7 hours I spent writing the show doc won't go to waste, but it'll still be. But I'm all like hot and bothered about talking about these important tech topics. Oh, well,
you're all hot and bothered about it already. Yeah, I get it. Well, Andy, thank you so much, as always, for doing the show with me every week.
Thank you for doing it with me.
Thank you to Jim, our editor, for editing us and making us sound good. And as for me, if you're interested in me, you can read my work at Gizmodo or you can go to florenceion.com, which I'm like doing stuff to. So if you want to go there and see if I'm writing stuff, you can. But just the code on the site is so bad right now because I haven't touched it and and I just don't have time. So I literally every 2 weeks I have an hour to work on it. So thanks for the support. But if you do go to florenceion.com, you will see all the links to where you can find me on Threads, on TikTok, on where else am I? Blue Sky. Where else am I, Andy? Oh, Discord. Discord. Come to my Discord. Anyway, all right. Well, that's the end of our show. I'm a little tired. Andy's a little tired, so we're going to go. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We hope that you have a happy, healthy 7 days. Bye-bye.
Toodaloo.